before we get started, I just kind of wanted to ask you to introduce yourself to the people who don't know who you are. Just kind of give the quick 5 minute on who is Alex Svedsky, what are you doing in this space, and maybe even why are you so passionate about Bitcoin?
All right, so who is Svedsky? He's a fucking raging lunatic who likes to piss people off in articles and ruffle feathers. I have been an entrepreneur all my life, I guess. That's probably the closest description to what I've done. Like, I dropped out of university when I was young, and I traded through the GFC, made a lot of money, then lost everything and destroyed myself. And then I kind of had to dig my way out of a load of debt. And the way I did that was just through launching different businesses. A bunch of them were a complete disaster, and a bunch of them worked out. And I learned a lot over the years. I was an early gold silver bug, so sort of 2010, 2011, back in the days when, I mean, Gerald Celente and all the guys are still around, but it was just an interesting period back then. And I kind of think Bitcoin came across the radar, but never took it seriously. And yeah, it wasn't until 2016 where I'd set up a recruitment automation software where we were trying to match people based on personality type to particular roles. We wanted to focus less on skills, more on experience and nature to sort of link people with opportunities. And I got Steve Jobs out of my own company actually at the time. And that was my catalyst to dig deep. And this junkie degenerate friend of mine was blabbering on about Bitcoin. I was like, fuck, is that thing still around? So yeah, that was the kickstart to my journey. And I always say, like, you know, I came for the money, but I stayed for the money. And I think I had some ingredients in me that made me really appreciate Bitcoin quickly. You know, I climbed Mount Stupid and shitcoining and blockchaining in the beginning. And yeah, the thing is, I've got this weird thing where I just can't lie to myself. I don't know how people can do that. I did that when I was a vegan. Like, I went down the whole vegan rabbit hole and I tried to convince myself that it was really good for me, and it turned out that it wasn't. And I did a whole backflip on that. I did the same with the environmentalist maniacs, the eco-terrorists. And yeah, like, the shitcoining thing, I just couldn't do it. And I then set out to build a Bitcoin business to help people acquire and accumulate Bitcoin. And that's what kind of spawned the entire Bitcoin DCA movement. So we were the first DCA app in the world. You know, we're in Australia. We're launching in the US as we speak, actually. We're in private beta. It'll go into public beta very shortly. People can check that out. It's at the Amber app. And I think we're actually going to be listing on Bank to the Future next week, I believe. So if anyone's interested in being a part of that journey, having a piece of that pie, we're doing some really interesting shit there. Feel free. So yeah, so that's basically in a nutshell, you know, me from an entrepreneurial standpoint and sort of the history. And then alongside, I guess I'm probably more well known for writing and the podcasting and tweeting that I do and getting banned all the time and all that sort of shit. So yeah, that's me.
So let's talk about Bitcoiners, because really, I think this article, it was about how mass adoption happened or how hyper-Bitcoinization happened, but it's really about the type of person that tends to be a Bitcoiner and why that person is so important, that type of person or that archetype of person is so important for digging society out of a rut effectively and moving society along throughout history. Tell me, like, before we actually even get into the context of the remnant and everything that's in the article, just talk to me about, like, your experience with Bitcoiners, interacting with the Bitcoin community, you know, just kind of like some personal, maybe anecdotes around Bitcoiners themselves.
Do you mean more like, you know, more personalities like Francis and sort of stuff?
Sure. Or? I mean, like, you know, you've entered into the Bitcoin space and really dove into the community headfirst, meeting people in person, like myself. Also just, you know, rubbing shoulders with people on the internet. Just talk about Bitcoiners in general.
It's a very unique, I don't know, I hate the word community, but like maybe tribe is better. There's people, and me and John Cavallo, I think he's on here. You know, we were talking about it when we caught up in whether it was Houston or Dallas or something. It's like, I don't know, that we're this unique kind of archetype or person that seems to be different to whether it's, you know, the family around us or the friend circle around us or the quote unquote community around us or the workplace and everything. And it's almost like we're the weirdos in Fight Club who seem to kind of attract each other because we're fucking all got our quirks and, you know, autistic traits and these eccentricities. We kind of see the world slightly different. To use a Matrix analogy, we're all either partially or something unplugged. You know, there's a splinter in our minds, right? And every time I've met Bitcoiners, you know, whether it's the kind of Bitcoiner that I would generally hang out with, or whether it's the kind of Bitcoiner that I would not generally hang out with, there's an ingredient about them that is different or unique. I don't sit down with a Bitcoiner and say, "Oh, how's the weather, bro?" That's not the kind of conversation you have. You know, you start thinking and discussing great things or important things. I came up, actually, I did a pod with Eric Kaysen yesterday, and you know, he was saying, "Man, if 10 years ago you told me that my bookshelves would look like I was back at university studying philosophy," he goes, "I would have laughed at you, because that's just the shit that I wasn't interested in." And I was like, "Yeah, man, if there was ever an indication that this was some sort of Renaissance 2.0 where random fucking people from around the world seem to be converging around, whether it's texts or ideas or concepts or something, that we're basically, without sounding like woo and fucking weird, but we're basically manifesting in real time." That's the definition of Bitcoiners, is this class of human, call it, that thinks differently, that cares deeply, that has some sort of alignment around first principles thinking, I guess, where they don't want to lie to themselves, where they're willing to, like me and Francis were talking about this the other night as well. It's, we have both had, but particularly him, I mean, he's been around Bitcoin longer than I have, for sure. And, you know, the amount of opportunities he had to become a shitcoiner and to make ridiculous amounts of "I'm retired" fucking money, but he didn't. And that takes such a special kind of character. Whereas you look at a Richard Hart, for example, who's the opposite side of that, where he was really intelligent, he really got Bitcoin. And you know, Dieter Bob was actually saying this in one of the Telegram groups. He's like, the guy was so fucking jealous that everyone else, all the shit coiners, were making money, and he could see through it, and that he couldn't figure out a way to actually add value in the space. So he just decided to jump ship, be a shit coiner, and basically throw away all the principles knowingly. And to me, that's sort of where you get the difference between an actual Bitcoiner. You get, you know, you have the archetype of the fucking, the completely asleep sheep, you know, the lemming, as I like to call them, or, you know, the masses. And then you sort of get the archetype of the Richard Hart types, which they're the ones who are most likely to become the Klaus Schwabs, because they are jealous of the natural remnant. They're jealous of the natural Bitcoiner, or jealous of the person who can actually produce and create something without throwing away their principles, without disregarding the things they know. And then what they do is they cloak it in this message of, "Oh, well, free market, whatever," or they cloak it in the message of, "Oh, I'm making this for everybody," or, you know, "We're all in this together," or "equality," or whatever other bullshit they want to cloak it in, so that they can be more acceptable to the fucking lemmings. That's kind of the story of history, in terms of, you know, the fake elites, the frauds, using the masses against the remnant, I guess. And I'm kind of going off on a tangent now, but bringing it back to Bitcoiners, I think the archetype of person that is a Bitcoiner is quite unique, and it's definitely the kind of people, I guess, if I've had to say I found my tribe, that is my fucking tribe more than anyone.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely felt that as well. And I like to say, like, Bitcoiners, they think and they live within big ideas, right? If you talk about Bitcoin ideas with an average person, like, you need to preface it like, "Hey, I'm about to hit you with a huge idea here." Because, like, they're literally not mentally ready or in shape enough to even take on some of the huge ideas that we talk about in terms of macroeconomic shifts and technological innovation and exponential growth and all this kind of stuff. These kind of concepts, second, third order effects, these are kind of concepts that the majority of people, they never even process that kind of thinking.
Yeah, we're like voluntary scholars. We've just decided to fucking nerd out of curiosity. And this is kind of, I don't know if you remember that article that I wrote last year, which was called Bitcoin and Lockdowns, where I created that model of, like, Bitcoin adoption, not a function of supply. And I said it's a function of, on one side, you've got curiosity, and on the other side, you've got need or pain. Sorry, it was curiosity and pain. So it's the movement from a want to a need. We'll have quote unquote mass adoption when every motherfucker needs to eat and the only way to eat is to use and have Bitcoin. And this was sort of like before I understood the, you know, long before I actually understood the remnant terminology and all that sort of shit. But like I had that essence of the understanding in me. It's like the people who are coming first, who are getting Bitcoin now, are fucking curious, man. And that means that they're getting Bitcoin because they want it and because they're curious enough that they can think differently. They can see a different future. They've got some sort of fucking vision inside their head and they're willing to discuss these big ideas. They're willing to challenge what the current world looks like. And to tag John again, like, you know, he's working on some really fucking interesting shit, which I'm sure we're all going to learn about in the coming months. But, you know, as he was talking about to me, I was like, this is a big brain motherfucker. And he's like thinking differently about stuff like identity and how we communicate and how we can do it in such a way where the onus is on the user to choose how they want to disclose information and as opposed to the backwards way that it's structured today. So it's like, these are the kind of people that I want to be around. And this is the difference, again, in energy, in perception, in style, in quality of human being. And I just find that fascinating.
So let's talk about the article. Right at the beginning, you talk about Francis and you talk about the inspiration of Elijah's job. Can you kind of just preview that and we can kind of get into breaking down the different concepts that you walk through in the article?
Yeah. So it was Isaiah's job, by the way, not Elijah. I'm sorry.
I'm like dyslexic, so it's insane that I even work at a media company.
It's all good. Well, I guess Albert Nock was a proto libertarian. He was around from like late 1800s to early 1900s, and he wrote a whole series of things. I mean, from what I understand, I haven't read too much of his stuff other than, I guess, Isaiah's job, but he was an inspiration for people like Ayn Rand and Rothbard, et cetera, right? Mises. The piece in particular is Isaiah's job, which if you're listening to this now, fucking bookmark this shit and read it at some point. But what it is, like he wrote this article, and I guess the other piece I'll just give for context is Francis has this like really tight group on Telegram called The Remnant, right? And you know, there's only a couple people in there, and you know, we've sort of all built a really close bond in that little group. And he invited me to it a little while back when we both went on our anti-lockdown journey and both went to the jungle in our own ways, right? It came up, like this article specifically came up in a discussion at Bitcoin 2021. So it was me, Madex, Francis, Russell Okung, and a couple others on the table, Matt Snow and a few others. And the thing came up and Francis was like, okay, so, you know, you guys have all read Isaiah's job, right? And we all kind of stared at him blankly, other than him and Madex. And they were like, what the fuck? You got to go read this shit. So anyway, I put it on the list and I never read the shit until like a couple weeks ago. And the basic premise, without me butchering it too much, like paraphrasing it, is this idea. So Isaiah was a prophet. He went out and he had a job, and his job was to be the preacher or the prophet of the remnant, not the prophet of the masses. And the way Albert Nock kind of discusses it in the essay is that he said, look, what you want to do is you do not want to go out and preach to everybody by diluting your message and making it more palatable to the everyman. What you want to do is you want to go out there and you want to preach. Yes, stand on a hill, preach so that everyone can hear you, but preach what is the fucking truth. And the people who need to hear this are the ones who are going to hear you. And those people are what God defines as the remnant. They're the people who God says, there's two things I can guarantee you is one, that they are out there, and two, that they will find you. And the only way they will find you is by you maintaining signal and not diluting your message into noise. And when I kind of think about this as a message, and I think about what we need to do in Bitcoin, is like, why have we Bitcoiners fucking found each other? And why have we aligned around these values and these principles that seem to coalesce and converge? It's because we have fucking signal. Like, how many times have people said Bitcoin is signal and the rest of the shit is noise? Well, that's what this is. That's a manifestation of this idea between the remnant versus the masses. Is the masses is fucking noise. It's background. It's static. It's always there. Whereas the remnant is that piercing signal that not everybody has the capacity to understand. And whether that is in their nature or part of their nurture or a part of a stage of life or whatever the case might be, like, you know, human beings are obviously multidimensional. You can't just fucking carve out a chunk and a chunk, right? That's something that's dynamic in nature. But I would argue that at any point in time, like the Pareto principle applies, is that 20% of people are going to hear this and 80% are not. And, you know, maybe in today's day and age where the numbers have been skewed to such a degree because of the fake fucking fiat world we live in, maybe that number is closer to 90-10 or, you know, 99-1. Irrespective, what matters is that God went out and told Isaiah that your job is to be the prophet of the remnant. And to do that, you need to have a consistent signal, a true message, and you will attract and speak to those who matter versus those who don't. I took the essence of that incredible essay and then I produced my thing. And I wanted to tie it into A, at the top of the article, you guys will see, I kind of take a swing at this idea of mass adoption. That fucking word has rubbed me the wrong way for years now. Like for fucking years, I hate when people get up and say, oh, you know, the goal is mass adoption. No, fuck you. The goal isn't mass adoption. The goal is fucking selective adoption. The goal is subverting the state and building something that doesn't, is incompatible with the fucking masses. It's incompatible with the default. That's the fucking goal. And we make that the default because it's superior. And then all the dumb cunts default onto it. That's how you change the world. You don't just go and fucking build a faster horse and cart. So I took a swing at mass adoption as a concept in the beginning. And then at the end, I kind of tied it into just our natural propensity to the stories that we've created from the beginning of time and art, and like whether it's music, speeches, stories, movies, whatever, they've all centered around the idea of a remnant. Even fucking zombie movies. Like, what are zombie movies? It's a few remnant remaining after the apocalypse, and the zombies are the masses. We are living through a zombie apocalypse today with fucking the masses walking around with face diapers on the beach, fresh air, and they're fucking suffocating themselves and going in the water trying to waterboard themselves because they think that that's what's fucking normal, apparently. So I kind of looped the great stories stuff in there. There's some Matrix quotes, you know, which is the ultimate remnant movie, and some Fight Club stuff. So
it's awesome. Yeah, anyway,
that's kind of like,
it's awesome to just like think of the, you know, zombie apocalypse movies, the Matrix, all these like storylines. Like, it is truly about the remnant pioneering a new brave world, right? Not to use that term, but, you know, just like a new future.
Yeah, it's always been the case. Like when you think about the game changers, like I also quoted in there, like Galileo and stuff. Do you think Galileo set out to, you know, convince us that, like, sorry, to convince the masses that the earth revolves around the sun, right? Like, no, that, like, no one was going to fucking understand him. Like, there was a select few other scientists and people that were thinking outside of the world-centric view of the universe that, listen, you know, there was Henry Ford's famous quote, which I have in there. Like, if I asked people what they wanted, they would have told me they wanted faster horses. He thought outside of the box and, you know, they proceeded to build the combustion engine. This is always the case. And this is where I think, like, there was a lot of lemmings after I wrote this thing. They were like, oh, you know, you're just a fucking, the Klaus Schwab version of Bitcoin. Sorry, the Bitcoin version of Klaus Schwab. And I was like, no. Let's like categorize the kind of person. And I think I did that in the beginning with Richard Hart, right? Vitalik is, you know, right there with the Richard Harts and the Klaus Schwabs of the world. Is you've got natural elites, and natural elites are people who are competent. When I think about elite, I think about fucking Bruce Lee or Usain Bolt or Steve Jobs or Nikola Tesla, you know, or Satoshi. That to me is an elite. And this is another crusade I'm on, is that we need to stop designating the fucking parasites, the scum and the dumb shits as elite. Christine Lagarde is not elite. She's a fucking leather face, you know, handbag on a fucking pair of legs, we can call it legs, that sucks the energy out of society, sucks the energy out of the room, sucks the energy out of humanity. That is not elite behavior. That's parasitic behavior. So it's completely different. So you've got these categories or archetypes of people. So you've got the remnant, which is the competent producer. We're going to use an Ayn Randian sort of model. We think about the Howard Rourkes of the world, the John Galtz of the world, the Dagny Taggarts of the world, right? They're the prime movers. Then you've got the looters and the moochers. the parasites and the scum, like in the Ayn Randian sense, the Jim Taggarts of the world. They cannot compete on the same playing field as the remnant. So what they do is they manufacture dissent amongst the masses so that they can bring the remnant down. They manufacture systems, games, and mechanisms via which they can steal because they can't compete on the same playing field. And that archetype is very prevalent. We see it all around us in, you know, the World Economic Forum, in politics. Like, you know, what's a politician? A politician is generally a failed entrepreneur or a failed business person who couldn't compete on the free market. So he went out there and wanted to create legislation, regulation, and fake advantages so that he could then do backdoor deals and make money. But that's effectively, you know, what modern education gave us, the fucking midwits, right? The masses who, as Roig nationalism would say, you know, the 85 to 115 IQ pieces, that you got these people who they think they're smart, they think they're intelligent. You know, like I don't really have to describe it to you because, you know, just the midwit meme is just the perfect example of it. You know, they will go out and you're an anti-vaxxer if you've only got two vaccines, you know, if you're wearing any less than six masks and, you know, social distancing less than 2 meters from me, you're killing grandmas and shit. Like that's the kind of archetype that the masses fits into, you know, like that dumb bitch yesterday who's like reminiscing on the happiest day of my life is being injected. Or Oprah, Norris, glad for you. You know, so that's the kind of like,
well, when I saw that, I was like, wow, she must have been really terrorized for a very long time to be in that mental state. To everyone, you know, who's listening, I really think that you should go check out the article. It's pinned to the top, really dives into a lot of this. And if you're enjoying this conversation, please share it. Help spread out the message. And again, as you can see, Alex does not hold back. He does not dilute his message at all. But Alex, kind of back to you.
Thank you, bro. Appreciate it. Yeah, so we've got these archetypes of people, right? So we've got the remnant, we've got the masses who don't matter, and we've got the fake elites, right? I think what I probably didn't do in the article, I didn't take any time to really define or discuss the fake elites. And I might do like a remnant part two article where I kind of dive into the psyche between the fake elites, which is basically we could call them the failed remnants or the egotistic masses, right? The megalomaniac version of the masses who wants to be a remnant, but is unwilling to put in the proof of work, you know, so they want to create a proof of stake model to make themselves a fake remnant so that they can compete unfairly with those who believe in proof of work. Vitalik is a perfect example, and so are all the rest of his fanboys and fangirls. When we look at those, the people who actually move the dial, the people who change the world, have always been a small group. And I guess I went on a little bit of a tangent here, but what I wanted to describe is that people kind of misread what I said yesterday. I had this dude called BTC Mailman or something. You know, he's like, oh yeah, you know, you're the Klaus Schwab of Bitcoin. What he doesn't understand is that a fake elite, like a Klaus Schwab type, is interested in the masses as a tool or as a weapon. The remnant is not interested in the masses, period. It doesn't give a fuck. The remnant is out there producing something incredible that they give a fuck about, like whether it's an artist. The remnant is the person who competes against the best version of himself to make himself a better version of himself. He's not interested in bringing others down. He's interested in lifting himself up. Whereas the Klaus Schwabs of the world are interested in bringing the remnant down and equalizing everybody and bringing everyone down to the same level so that they can control them. The remnant doesn't give a fuck about controlling you as the masses. At worst, the remnant doesn't even acknowledge your existence. And at best, you are a trading partner at a distance. That's it. That's the relationship between the remnant and the masses. Whereas the relationship between the parasites and the masses is one of the masses are a tool to bring down the remnant. And that's a very, 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 very important model to understand the difference in the archetypes and the difference in the motivations behind these groups of people. And tying that back to the prime movers of the world is we have for too long, like I think the message around like the 1% got diluted. And I was always, ever since I was young, I was always driven. I was always top in my math class. You know, I wanted to do the best when I played soccer. When I was, you know, at the gym, I was always trying to be the best from a body to weight.
I remember lifting with you once.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, you kicked my ass.
So I've always wanted to like push myself, not to, again, bring somebody else down or to beat somebody else. That's not the goal. The goal is actually to beat the prior version of myself. And this is actually going to be the topic actually of my next Jordan Peterson piece after chapter three. Chapter four is, you know, don't compete with others, compete with who you were yesterday. And that is remnant behavior, right? You're competing with yourself and making yourself better. So that differentiator, fucking, I've kind of lost my train of thought now, but that differentiator is, I guess, core to it. And
you were talking about the remnant versus parasitical elite.
I think I've bashed on about this enough at this point about the differences between them. But I think suffice it to say, basically, is that prime mover is the one that transforms society and builds a new default. So the other analogy I used in there was inertia versus an initiating force. So the remnant is the initiating force, and the inertia is kind of like the deaf, dumb, blind force that continues after it. So when you think about the difference between, you know, the masses and the remnant, it's like the remnant's the first mover, the early adopter, the one who sets the standard, sets the pace, right? We actually create the new world, and then we kind of open it for business to the masses, because the masses, when I say in there they don't matter, it's not because I'm saying that their existence doesn't matter, which, I mean, maybe I am saying that because I don't really give a fuck about them. It's not that I want them to die, but it's like that I don't think about them. It's like, whatever, do whatever the fuck you want. But they will default to whatever the status quo is. So if the Klaus Schwabs of the world win, like the World Economic Forum type archetype wins, if we get a world in which we'll own nothing and be happy, the masses won't give a fuck. They will default to that. They will have nothing. They will have no privacy and they will be happy. But if the Bitcoin is, if the remnant win and we transform the world into one in which the individual is the focal point, where, you know, personal responsibility reigns, where you'll own stuff, and you won't just be happy, you'll have deep meaning against which you may discover happiness, and you will go through periods of sadness, and you'll feel the whole spectrum of fucking emotion, then the masses will default to that. And actually, like, maybe as an extension to this, and this is probably what I'll write about in the second article, is, you know, I've also been going on a crusade talking about how Bitcoin doesn't just break all your models, but Bitcoin breaks all the cycles. So all the fourth turning shit, all the previous cycles that we've tried to view humanity through and make sense of humanity cycles, all that shit goes out the window post hyper Bitcoinization. We don't have any more fourth fucking turning, first, second, third turning bullshit. We don't have any of that fucking crap anymore. We move into a completely different world in which the feedback loop between decision making and consequence is shortened, such that people don't actually have the luxury of being a blind lemming, otherwise they die of starvation very quickly. So it actually is a forcing function to unplug more people, or maybe unplug is not the right word at that point. Maybe it's a forcing function to raise the standard across all people. So maybe we move into an age where the remnant idea doesn't matter as much, like, because it's post Bitcoin, like it's a new, like, we become Homo Bitcoinicus, you know, and we sort of evolve from Homo sapiens. But that's another tangent there.
Yeah, so that's a very big idea. Speaking of, you know, big ideas, on this idea of, like, you know, when the masses will come to Bitcoin, you know, I put out this thought that, hey, you know, you think Bitcoin maximalists are quote unquote toxic now. Imagine what the masses are going to be like, you know, in a Bitcoin future after they've been scammed for years and got so much less kind of the upside in terms of acquiring sats early. So they're going to be extremely toxic in terms of their aptitude to kind of deal with your next altcoin or whatever. I do think that there's a cycle there, and, you know, people have to come in later. That's just how it's going to work. But I want to talk about selective adoption, right? This is kind of a big theme here, which is, like, we don't necessarily want to bring on mass adoption and dilute our message, but rather we want to double down on undiluting your message as much as possible and bringing in the right people, quote unquote, which is like selective adoption.
Yeah. Think about it as the example I would give is the movie 300, and you've got the Spartans. That's your selective adoption. Who were the other guys when Leonidas was in the, when they were getting...
The Athenians.
No, it wasn't the Athenians. It was the other guys who had ended up allying with them, but kind of ran off scared very quickly in the beginning. Anyway, it wasn't the Athenians. It was kind of similar to that. But whatever, the where he said, you know, he looks at Leonidas and he said, you know, you only brought this many soldiers? And then he's like, "You there? What is your profession? You there? What is your profession?" You know, he's like, "Oh, I'm a farmer, sir. You know, I'm a blacksmith." And he's like, "Spartans, what is your profession?" You know, that's the difference between signal and bringing on the remnant versus diluting your fucking message and getting a bunch of farmers and blacksmiths who don't give a fuck. Because when wartime comes, and make no fucking mistake about it, we are either in wartime or wartime is coming and it's going to get worse. You want the fucking Spartans at your side. You don't want the fucking farmer who's going to run away and leave you there. So this is like, we are fundamentally transforming the world beyond, we are currently FUBAR, like fucked up beyond all recognition, and the world is going to be fixed up beyond all recognition. So we're going to move into a new level of FUBAR past Bitcoin. But to get there, we are going to need fucking soldiers in the ranks and people who actually give a shit about this thing. And that is not going to come from some flaky fucking degenerate that is viewing the world through a lens of which shitcoin I can pump and dump and make more dollars against. That is not the kind of person we want. And if we try and dilute our messages, our products, our services, our ideas to cater to those fuckwits, all we're going to do is bring in the flakes into our ranks. And we don't want those. We don't give a fuck about those. Like when you look at the Bitcoin cycles, what happens is the media actually dilutes the Bitcoin message, right? What's the media's message of Bitcoin? Oh, Bitcoin fucking is up 80% this week. And who comes? The fucking lemmings, the masses come. They buy Bitcoin blindly without understanding what the fuck they're doing. They come and make all this noise. You know, you get fucking messages from all your dumbass friends who you haven't seen for ages. Oh, bro, it's now a good time to buy. You know, that's that archetype. And then instead of actually doing something about learning about what the fuck they bought, you know, a small subset of them do, right? So there is, you know, this is part of like the beauty of the remnant in not knowing where they are, but the knowing that they exist is that, you know, they may hear something along the way, but they will begin to find signal very quickly and discover pieces from whether it's, you know, GG or Breedlove or me or Bitcoin Magazine or Eric Kaysen or whatever. And they will find the signal very quickly and they will stick and hang on to fucking Bitcoin. Whereas the rest of the flaky motherfuckers will disappear and they'll end up in, you know, name the shitcoin or name the cryptocurrency. They'll go back to their US dollars and their stonks. So this is why selective adoption is so important. Like we need the right people in the ranks. And if we do not fucking signal to them, we are going to get the fucking losers. And nobody wants the losers on your team. I don't know if there's a better way I could say that.
I love how you don't hold back, Alex. That's for sure. That's for sure. So, I mean, we got some people requesting Parman. We also have Francis and John in the audience. Maybe they want to come up on stage. But there's a lot more to this article if we just want to keep chugging through it. All right, Bitcoiners, I want to tell you about our newest sponsor. This show is brought to you by Ledin.io. I have been super, super impressed with the guys over at Ledin. I've actually known the co-founders, Adam and Maurizio, for a very long time. I've had the pleasure to watch them build Ledin up from a tiny, tiny startup to now a super impressive institutional grade Bitcoin and crypto lender. Y'all, I'm so impressed with these guys. They are offering some of the best rates out there. I don't think anyone even comes close to touching them. You can get 6.1% APY on your first two Bitcoin that you deposit into Ledin interest accounts, and you can get 8.5% on USDC deposits. I mean, I know all the competitors. They're not even close. If you're going to put your crypto and your Bitcoin into an interest account, Ledin is by far the best. And on top of that, like I said, these guys are hardcore Bitcoiners and they know the products and the services that Bitcoiners want and appreciate. They came up with B2X. It allows you to put your Bitcoin in, they leverage it up, and you can, with one click of the mouse, get twice the exposure to Bitcoin. So if you're super bullish, Ledin has you covered with a super, super easy way to get leverage with B2X. And then on top of that, they know that Bitcoiners care about your reserves. They know that Bitcoiners don't like under-reserved and not full-reserved financial institutions. So they are pushing the frontier in transparency in the digital asset lending space. And they are the first digital asset lender to do a full proof of reserves and proof of attestation through a Mariano LLC, a public accounting firm. So the Ledin guys, they know what Bitcoin is like. They are legit. I encourage you guys to check them out. Do your own research and go to Ledin.io. That is Ledin.io, and learn more.
Let's bring a few questions in, and then we can kind of loop back and, you know, pick some other pieces out of the article. We can talk about the great stories and shit. But let's see if anyone wants to, you know, if there's any questions and shit.
All right, I let Parman and El Hoddle up on stage. Parman, what's up, man? What do you have to add to the convo?
I only just got in, so only the end of Svetsky's beautiful rant, and I was thinking, I agree with you. We need the right people in Bitcoin. But how do you know who they are? I mean, price gets people in, and I wasn't particularly. I didn't know the principles of Bitcoin when I came in. I was exposed to shitcoins, and I was interested in price going up. It was only when I actually took the time to think, oh, maybe I'll look at a podcast and see what this is. And it took me a year to do it.
Yeah,
I wish it was
sooner. The existence of the podcast is what made you dig deeper, because you had the ingredients that would make you, you know, the quote-unquote archetype of a remnant, right? So if that podcast, like if you listen to a Stefan Levera podcast and he's like, hey, welcome to the Stefan Levera podcast where we talk about Bitcoin, crypto, and blockchain and how this is going to, you know, make the world a better place, you would not have any fucking signal there. That's a diluted message designed for the masses. And that's the kind of shit that, you know, the lemming would kind of listen to one day and fucking disappear the next. What you found was, correct me if I'm wrong, you found signal. You found fucking juicy content of shit that was talked about by people who gave a fuck. And that's how you find the remnant, is that you stay on message. You don't fucking waver from the message and make it more nice and accommodating for the fucking losers. That's the
That's a good point. Yep.
You know, I guess I can definitely relate to that as well. I would pride myself as someone who kind of got through the ICO mania relatively quickly, as I was a Bitcoin newbie in 2017. Pretty much I had enough, you know, kind of startup experience to realize like, wow, these are just startups that are selling tokens. Like, let me look into this a little more. Started looking up like, what's wrong with blockchain? What's wrong with crypto? Found the Bitcoin maximalists and Ansel Lindner in particular. And like, you could just tell like his content was very differentiated with his understanding of the market. And that kind of really started my journey. And I think a lot of other people had a similar experience like this with, you know, when Clubhouse started getting really big, there was the crypto rooms and then there's the Bitcoin only rooms. And, you know, the Bitcoiners frequently went into the crypto rooms and then just kind of crushed these mass adoption kind of peddlers with their kind of understanding of the space. So, and their kind of conviction around their ideas. So I definitely think that, you know, not diluting your message is the key here. And then the right people will come by filtering themselves out.
Totally. Like, I've got a piece here where I'm just going to read a passage from the article. It says, for Bitcoin or any other grand invention for that matter to succeed, it needs selective adoption. It needs to be built for the game changers, for the revolutionaries, for the 1%. It needs to be built for the trendsetters, for the leaders, and for the remnant. We are the ones who make it into a default because we have the courage to buck the trend. If we depended on the masses, the default would be gulags and they'd be happy with their lot. You know, so yes, Bitcoin is for everybody, but everybody will not come because they understand it or know why it exists. They'll come because it's the only choice left. They'll come once we've already won and when the truth has prevailed. So that's kind of like my whole premise is that, you know, they don't matter. We don't need mass adoption. We need to get the right people on. We need to keep the signal. When it's the only choice left, see, people think that, oh, yeah, but, you know, the other choice will be CBDCs. That's not really a choice. Like, when you have, quote-unquote, two options, you don't actually have a choice. You know, you have starvation and slavery, or you have choices. And that's literally going to be the situation for people, is it's going to be slave coin or choice coin, you know, freedom coin or freedom land or whatever the fuck we want to call what Bitcoin's going to represent. And that's not really a choice. Like, at that point, when you are living on the east side of the Berlin Wall and you see people on the west side, you know, hanging out, you're going to go jump that fucking fence and get shot, you know, on the way. When you're a cow in the fucking barn, you know, on top of every other fucking cow and there's green pastures and meadows outside, you want to be over there. So at that point, it's not a choice. At that point, Bitcoin's won, but we have to have people who understand that, who are going to join our ranks, who are going to get us there. And that is not the masses. It never was, never will be. If we don't keep attracting those people, like if we scare them off is not the right word, because you know, you can't bully, you can't scare off a remnant. What we want to do is we want to qualify them on the way in. It's like an initiation. This is why the, you know, the quote unquote toxic maximalism is so important, is that it scares off the fuckwits. Like I said this on a Spaces the other day, is like, you can't bully a remnant. that's not how it works. You know, a remnant will fucking push you back in the face. Like, they'll say, fuck you, I'm not going to kowtow to you. So it's like that initial filtering process ensures that you have the right people in the ranks so that you can win the 100-to-1 war or the 1,000-to-1 war or the 100,000-to-1 war, because that's the game that we're playing. We are fundamentally subverting not only the parasites, but we are subverting the masses. They're more than happy to keep wearing their face diapers and reporting their neighbors and reporting to the government and paying their taxes. They're more than happy to fucking continue doing that until they literally have nothing and then drug themselves with soma to be happy. They're literally ready for that.
So, Spetsky, if you don't mind me just ask a quick question here. Once we find ourselves, we find each other, we find another remnant, right? Then what? So what do we do to contribute to the tribe, to contribute to the space? Like if you could give us like 2-3 pointers or 2-3 ideas of what else can we do besides hodling and besides standing on the top of the hill and trying to, you know, convince the sheep, because the sheep, obviously, they're still not listening. That's a waste of time, right? So what can we do to continue to add value to this and to just help the whole movement?
So one of the things is God says to Isaiah, getting up on the mountain and speaking is fine. You're going to have to, by default, preach in public so that the remnant can hear you. And I kind of wrote it in here. I was kind of just like flicking through the article to see where I'd written that. But it was about the synchronicity that a lot of us have felt recently, et cetera, is that Bitcoiners build products. We produce content, we communicate, we create networks, like we do stuff. And there is like a, you know, we amplify the signal. Like we're effectively not only nodes on the Bitcoin network, we're nodes in the Meta Bitcoin network, you know, that is the signal required for other Bitcoiners and other remnant to find us. So we need to act as those nodes. Now, we're all different. You know, some people are musicians, some people are artists, some people are coders, some people are entrepreneurs, some people are speakers, some people are fucking tweeters, some people are NIMs, some people are public. Like we all sort of, you know, can play a role as remnant to amplify the signal. But the outcome is to amplify the signal and to maintain the purity of the signal, not to let it turn into fuzzy ass noise that the other remnant won't see. So I guess that's probably my best answer to that, is that we need to find our own hills to preach publicly to preach to in public, in whatever domain that public means. But we need to do it in a way where the signal penetrates and 1 out of every 100 people who hear it, see it, listen to it, experience it, are going to be the ones that get drawn in.
Yeah, man. And I was thinking the same thing, because I'm like, okay, so I'm a farmer, right? I'm a grower. Like I'm starting to, you know, I'm looking for land now. I'm growing food. I've grown other things very well before as well. And so what I'm thinking is I need to start orange pilling other farmers and other people that are in the community as well, and get them to start receiving Lightning and get them onboarded so we can for real subvert the system. Yeah. So I guess to your point is that's where I've put my main focus as of right now. I want to reach out to other farmers that are also growing shit that I like and that we can network with and that we could build a circular economy with.
That's your domain. That's your domain. You own that shit. And then you speak to those people and that's perfect. And now a lot of them are not going to listen because of their, and this is the thing, like there's also the argument of what I would call like the 80-20 all the way down, right? Which is the dormant remnant. So if we're going to assume that 80% of the masses and 20% of the remnant, then of that 20%, 80% are maybe dormant. They have the ingredients, they have the capacity to be a remnant, but only 20% of them are fucking active and awake. And then of those 20% that are active remnant, that are awake and everything, maybe only 20% are really fucking radical. So you've got this kind of intensification or magnification of the layers of remnant. So maybe the people on this call, we are the radical remnant. You know, we're the 20% of the active remnant, and you know, the active remnant of the 20% of the, you know, the natural remnant that exists. So you're going to have to find a way to pierce through those layers. So I think there's a whole fucking rabbit hole here in which to understand the psyche of the people we want on our side, basically.
Well, I used to be in sales, and one of the most impactful books that I've ever read was 80-20 Sales and Marketing. The author talks about how there's an 80-20 within the 80-20 within the 80-20. And it goes all the way down, exactly what you talked about. So it's like these power levers. It's pretty awesome. To El Hodl, you know, I would just say, if you could take anything from this, it's like when you're talking to those farmers, don't be afraid of giving the unadulterated message, right? So that way, obviously, you want to be well-intentioned and, you know, don't scare someone off by kind of jumping into something that's like way too, you know, over their head. But at the same time, don't dilute the message. Don't be like, it's about crypto, it's about these things, just to try to get them in. You want the guys who are open to hearing you out per se, rather than, you know, diluting the message just to get them in.
I'm going to just quickly tie off this thought before we throw this to someone else. But so I just found the quote in the article. So I'm going to read the quote from Albert Nock and then sort of my piece on it. So it says, Albert Nock's quotes, if, for example, you are a writer or a speaker or a preacher, you put forth an idea which lodges in the Uben Wüsten, that's like a German word, so I guess that's like the subconscious of a casual member of the remnant, and sticks fast there. For some time, it is inert. Then it begins to fret and fester until presently it invades the man's conscious mind and, as one might say, corrupts it. Meanwhile, he has forgotten how he came by the idea in the first instance, and even perhaps think he has invented it. And in those circumstances, the most interesting thing of all, that is, you never know what the pressure of the idea will make him do. So this is sort of like how you plant a seed and a remnant awakens, you know, maybe when they least expect it. So then my commentary to that is, ever wonder why we all seem to converge onto such profound truth separately, individually, but collectively? You know, it's that synchronicity that many have recently spoken of. Bitcoiners plant seeds. We write code, we produce content, we discuss ideas, and we remain committed to the truth and first principles. As we do this, we don't only plant seeds in others' mind, but we create fertile ground for seeds of truth to grow in our own minds. This is the reward we get for the path we chose to walk. So maybe that sort of helps close that loop.
Mr. Hodl, welcome to the stage. What do you want to add to the conversation?
I just want to say thank you to Alex for articulating something that I've been trying to say for about like 6 years. So that's pretty much it. Thank you.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. You've been one of the inspirations along that path, man, for sure.
Mr. Hodl, what's your two stats on this topic in general, since it's something that sounds like you've been thinking about for a while?
I don't know. It's weird. So Bitcoin definitely needs capital to work. Obviously, the more people, the more new blood comes in, it helps number go up. But the unpopular opinion here is that one billionaire could equal 100,000 plebs. My worry was that, are we going to have enough capital? Are we going to have enough like-minded people to lift Bitcoin off the ground? If we did, then I wouldn't have to worry about the masses because we don't need them. But that tipping point, I think, like, happened in 2017. Like, before 2017, I wasn't sure. Like, I thought this was really for the radical. But the problem is that Bitcoin, as the subsidy goes down, you know, you still have to have those incentives. But what I realized later on is that the best marketing tool Bitcoin has is number go up. So even the plebs and the peasants, the people that don't care about Bitcoin, they're going to be forced to use it. Like, they're going to have no choice. They're going to have to look. I have cousins in Russia in 2015 that were calling me up to buy iPhones because they were looking to store their money in something that was going down in less value than the ruble. So they were looking, obviously I was like, you know, this is what Bitcoin's made from, but they didn't care. They didn't, like, they wanted iPhones. Once like 2020 hit, they called me back and they started asking me about Bitcoin. So the key is to plant seeds to everybody. And then just, I would not sit there and try to convince anybody anymore. I would just plant the seed. They're going to tell you a million reasons why Bitcoin is going to fail and why Bitcoin isn't going to work. Say, okay, just say, okay, good luck. Take it easy. And then I promise you, in 3-4 years, 5 years, they will be giving you a call. So yeah, I don't think Bitcoin needs mass adoption, but I do think Bitcoin needs capital. But I think we've reached that point. I think we have enough people on board now that consistently dollar cost average. We built our own country. Like, we haven't, we are, what's the size of Bitcoin's currency worldwide? It's like number like 9 or something right now. So I think we're past that point where we need new people. I think we already have enough people on board now that are believers, that are all like-minded people, that we don't need anybody else, honestly. If more people come, great, but we don't need them.
yeah, what I would extend there is maybe it's not that we don't need more people. It's that we need to, that the people that we want holding Bitcoin, without sounding like too much of a, I know what the right person to hold Bitcoin is. It's like the people that any society or any person generally wants around them is other productive people, other responsible people, right? Like, I don't want irresponsible, non-productive, consumptive, fat, dumbass fucking people around me, right? So they're the kind of people that I still know that there is, like, this is what I would call the dormant remnant. So maybe we've only like tapped into the 20% of the 20% of the 20% at this point. So maybe I wouldn't even say maybe, there is definitely a large proportion of dormant remnant sitting there. They see the injustice in the world. They see that it's all fucking broken. Maybe they're just sort of still plugged in, quote unquote, to the matrix. And our job is to unplug those ones, not to unplug lemmings who don't want to be unplugged. Like, you know, as Morpheus says in his little thing about the construct, most of these people who are still plugged in, they're so inured, they're so hopelessly dependent on the system that they will even fight to fucking protect it. That is, you know, what we're up against. And any one of them could effectively be, quote unquote, an agent. Like the first Matrix movie is the ultimate remnant movie. Like it really, really is. And, you know, we just need to think about the signal that catches the attention of those who are willing to be unplugged. Save our red pills or our orange pills for them, not for the dumbass, not for the
scientists. But like, I used to be like you. I used to try to find those people. Like my mission was to find those people. But then I got to a point where I stopped giving a fuck. Like I just stopped caring. Like, you know, like I know what Bitcoin does for myself. I know there's enough people that are awoke to what Bitcoin is and that, you know, we're at a point where Bitcoin isn't going to die. I don't know. Like I feel you. I hear you. I want, you know, I want as many like-minded people to own Bitcoin and to be prosperous. I am 100% with you. But I just have a hard time caring now. Like I really, really, really have a hard time caring.
Let me jump in real quick. I really appreciate that perspective, Hoddle. And that was kind of part of what Alex was saying at the beginning. We have some new people on stage and I see MVK is raising his hand. MVK, you want to jump in?
Yeah. So I'm of both, middle of both of your arguments. Wake up the lions, don't bother with the sheep, right? Mm-hmm. Because the sheep are noise. And they are the ones saying, oh, you know, we don't want more toxic stuff. And they are essentially trying to pacify, or actually, they can actually cause more problem than they are of help at this stage. I agree with Hodo, like, you can't really kill BTC anymore. That's pretty much done. Part of the issue is we've been in this space for a long time. We've seen some returns. But I think there's a huge batch of people that are very recent, say people who came in 2017 or things like that, that have not seen maybe enough returns yet. So they are more incentivized to bring more people in because, you know, more people never go up. So having some returns for the 2017 class that is meaningful will sort of keep that class from seeking maybe less ideal means of increasing their net worth. For example, I don't know, running scams or running conferences that are really bad content or bringing in or trying to find means of income from being an influencer where have no clue what they're talking about. So I want to see like people finding returns so they don't do stupid things for money.
If they were smart, they would shut up and stack as many stats as possible because those people are going to come regardless. Yeah. They're going to come. So like the smarter move would be to shut up.
There is a ton of influencers now that have no clue what the fuck they're talking about. So they're already here. But I think there's still room to bring more lions, let's put it this way, and find more allies in that sense that can help with other things. But
there definitely is.
Maybe we're like in a transition phase. Do you know what I mean? It's like we're transitioning from the revolutionaries into sort of like the next thing.
Possibly. I think we still got room for the revolutionaries because the world is, you know, still, you know, largely retarded. I think to your point, Hoddle, it's like, yes, I know you don't care, but do you know what's funny? You actually still act as an important signal on Twitter. And maybe that's just the domain that you're willing to do. Like maybe a couple of years back, you were willing to, you know, go to conferences and do all sorts of other shit. But now you're like, look, my contribution to the Bitcoin signal is that I will call out these fucking losers who have in the past, like, you know, you called out Udi yesterday, which was beautiful. Like, you know, he was an XT guy. So, and Udi's the one who wants to dilute the message, whereas you want to preserve that. And your manifestation of the preservation of the Bitcoin signal is done via maintaining your pure position on Twitter. And that's fucking perfectly fine, because guess who you helped influence? People like me. I have the energy because I'm not as notable on Twitter. I have other ways, other levers that I can pull that can spread the Bitcoin signal to people that, you know, maybe you don't reach. So that's fine. It's all fucking fine. We're all doing exactly what we need to do.
I appreciate that, Alex.
The thing is, we just – absolutely, bro. Absolutely. And so the thing for me is we just don't fucking dilute it. That's it. So even if it's a small signal, even if you're talking to three people, keep the signal pure. Before
Udi definitely triggered me. Before Udi, I was just shitposting. Basically, after 2x nonsense, I just was doing nothing but shitposting. But Udi definitely hit a nerve. You know, I'm seeing what he's doing, and he is 100% trying to dilute the message. And that's where I started to get a little pissed off again. But yeah, I appreciate my idea was that eventually we were all like all of us, like not early adopters, but you know, everyone that's been here since like 2011, 2012, that have been trying fighting the fight, they're going to get burnt out. They're going to get burnt out, and they're just not going to be interested in. Before I used to go on Whale Club, Whale Pool, on IRC, on Reddit, Bitcoin Talk. I stopped. I stopped all that. I was just on shit posting now. But yeah, I appreciate that people like you have come on the scene and basically just like took it with vengeance. So I really do appreciate it.
If I could jump in real quick, and sorry, Alex, actually, Mr. Hoddle, I remember you followed me when I had like 200 people, and that was a huge part of me just continuing to double down on Bitcoin. So just to kind of second what Alex said in a personal experience. For all the people listening, if you appreciate this conversation, please share it out. Let's get it as big as possible. And a reminder that this conversation is being recorded, so it will be a podcast later. So you can find that at Bitcoin Spaces Live on your podcast app if you want to find it or hear the beginning or anything like that.
Sweet. I mean, at this point, if anyone else wants to mention something, I see Pablo's on. Hey, brother.
Hey, Alex. How are you doing, man?
Good, man.
Yeah,
I wanted to
chime in because I heard what MBK said, and that totally resonated with me because I'm precisely on that situation. I came in late 2017. I bought like $500 of Bitcoin in 2017, and I increased my conviction and stack throughout the bear market. So I haven't seen the fiat gains that earlier Bitcoiners have seen. I agree with that part of what MBK said. I don't agree with the part where we need to quote unquote save the 2017 class to prevent us from scamming or from, I don't know, doing unsavory things to try to increase our stack. I think there's a natural selection there, right? Where if what you're in for is just some fiat gains, whether you are 2013, 2012, 2017, 2020, whatever the fuck you are, if you're here just for some fiat gains, you're going to eventually...
Pablo, can I push back real quick? You're saying fiat gains, but what if we said purchasing power gains? What if we said gains to be able to buy more cows, more meat? Like, we say fiat gains because right now, the unit of account, if you like it or not, is fiat. that's how we measure our value. So, like, it's not the fiat gains. It's your purchasing power. When you increase your purchasing power, you're incentivized to continue to show. But it's not fiat gains.
Let me just add a little bit to context, because Pablo was answering to that point. Reality is everybody loves money. If you are into Bitcoin and you say you don't like money, you know, you're probably lying or lying to yourself. It's like money buys freedom, right? And Bitcoin happens to be both. I think the issue is people will often divert their time and energy toward things that pay off, right? And when you have bear markets, people start doing stupid stuff. and especially people that want to apply their whole life and their whole time altruistically towards Bitcoin, right? So what often happens, and I see this a lot, is like people will try stupid things to find a way to find income in Bitcoin or to remain doing all day Bitcoin, right? And they'll force it through, right? So like they came in with good intentions, but then they see that maybe that original idea on how to live off of Bitcoin activities all day doesn't pay as much as they think they would. And then they start sort of like making moral concessions, right? And sort of like, but, you know, if I just add a token, or maybe, you know what, I'm just going to run an affiliate thing for Bitcoin products. And then you're now ruining privacy for people, right? So like, people will always find a way of justifying to themselves things. And that's normal. There's nothing abnormal about that. So I guess my message is, you know, instead of like compromising on things that might be even detrimental to Bitcoin, go fiat mine, right? And then buy Bitcoin with it, instead of trying to find ways of doing something and then compromising just because it is hard.
Are you seeing a lot of that in VK?
Yeah, there is quite a bit. Yeah.
I see it now and then, but I don't see a lot. I don't know, maybe you're following different people, but I see mainly people trying to promote Bitcoin and improve the future of Bitcoin. I don't know
what it is. What I see a lot is people who build audiences by being like super Bitcoin maxi. And then as the audience grows, then they start either sort of like becoming shitcoin friendly or bringing shitcoiners, or sort of like they now don't want to offend big names because they, you know, they want the audience, and sort of like starts to dilute, right? I mean, you know, love Pomp, but look at his podcast, right? I mean, it's like a festival of like scammers, right? So people are going to have their brand, their earning sort of like cow to be, of course, way more important than Bitcoin's sort of integrity, right? So it's tricky.
But this feels like a classic case of like, don't tell me what you think, show me your portfolio. And I think what Pablo was talking about is much more a function of, when I hear the term fiat gains, I think about fiat settlement out of Bitcoin before that store of value is used for consumption, right? So if you think of the value, like the value chain of the money, it is contribute work to society, accrue value, store that value in some sort of technology, and for us it's Bitcoin, and then migrate to consumption, right? Like that to me is the life cycle of my economic worth. I think what other people are looking to do is to grow the purchasing power of that economic worth, settle back into fiat with the expectation that they're going to be able to consume in excess of what they would be able to consume otherwise. That's the fiat gain.
As long as the number go up in people's wallets, right? That's how like humans think, right? It's like, you know, more bananas. It doesn't matter what is the unit of account, really.
I mean, from the very beginning, I've always had this assumption that humans want security, and money is like, in the world that we live in this monetary world that we live in, money is security. And it just so happens that Bitcoin is the best form of money that we've ever seen. So the game theory here is that even people in government, they're still people that's, you know, they still need money, and they eventually will be forced into adopting Bitcoin personally on a personal level. The ingredient to that, what sets all this, what glues all this, is the 21 million coin cap. It's why people, you know, that's the pitching point from day one, uncensorable money with the 21 million coin cap. And that 21 million coin cap is why we think number go up, is why we have number go up. The more people that adopt Bitcoin, there's just so many UTXOs that are able to be owned. And because of the incentives, like, you know, a lot of people think Bitcoin is unhackable, it's this, it's that. The reason Bitcoin is where it is today is only because of incentives. Technically, a miner, Ghash, could have killed Bitcoin. Jihan could have killed Bitcoin if you wanted to back in the day. But it costs, it's in the incentives there, just it prevents you from doing it. So it's, I just think that we have the best form of money that humans have ever seen. And I'm pretty sure that sooner or later, the entire world will have to adopt it just because of necessity. Like, they just won't have a choice.
They got to eat. Yeah, they got to eat. So to tie this back into the whole remnant discussion, and to sort of, maybe Pablo, if you allow me to kind of like loop what you're saying and kind of tie it all together, I think the essence here is that people, to MVK's point, like, for people that kind of have that moment of realizing that Bitcoin is, you know, better money, they, you know, the weaker amongst them, we could call them, like, you know, and I described that archetype at the beginning of this discussion, is like the rigid hearts of the world who realize that Bitcoin is superior money. That's the self-preservation drive of a human being. They try and find ways to scam people and to do whatever, like to make some more of this Bitcoin. But then they realized that they were scammers, so then they kind of doubled down on the scam, tripled down, and they, you know, they sort of build out an identity that is this sort of big scam thing. Whereas the other path, and that's kind of what I would argue is the kind of people we probably don't want. And it's not that we don't want them, because they're going to get it anyway, but it's not the archetype that that at least that I want to appeal to. Like, in fact, I want to appeal to a very different type of archetype, which, you know, Pablo is a representative of, is someone who came in 27, bought at the top, but found something really, really deep and meaningful here and decided to work and quote unquote fiat mine so that he could acquire more Bitcoin and do it in a way that, you know, doesn't sell his soul. Because every action, every decision we make has a cost to it. If you acquire Bitcoin in a mechanism where you out yourself as a rigid heart, small dick scammer, you turn into the person that, you know, the cost of that is being vilified and ostracized by people like me. And I have no harm in doing that, because at the end of the day, Richard Hart is the only kind of people that are going to be around him is ass kissers and the people he pays to be around him. Whereas the people that will be around me are people like Pablo and Francis and, you know, solid Bitcoiners. And that has some fucking meaning in life. That's a reward in and of itself. So it's a different quality of person as well.
So Alex, you're totally spot on. But just thinking in terms of the system, right? Not the individuals for a second. The issue with sort of like, let's call it the morally dubious lions, right? As we uncarefully build these people up, they actually can cause a lot of damage, right? Because the only things that can really harm Bitcoin nowadays are social. Realistically speaking, it's going to be very hard to kill Bitcoin through mining attacks or any other stuff, because that stuff has cost, right? But now, as we build people up, they now have a lot of people who don't know better following them. And because they get the stage, right, they are able to cause a lot of damage, cause a lot of grief, and waste an ungodly amount of time on the people who have to refute the bullshit. That's why it's so important for people to always keep an eye open and sort of like immediately go full toxic on the bullshit, right? I mean, we literally have a meme now where kicking the toxins out. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah, well, 100%. And that just literally ties back into the signal is fuck you. You call me toxic and I'll double down on my toxicity because, you know, I don't care about the potential damage. You actually just answered a question, I think, that Logscale kind of tweeted at me saying, you know, I'm on stage, but I can't ask the questions. So here's my questions. What are concrete examples of, you know, harm to Bitcoin that could result from bringing the wrong people in too early? So it's like, it's not like my job isn't to select who should come in and who shouldn't. That's the individual's decision. But, you know, the harm that can be done is by, like what MVK just said, is these morally dubious lions coming in and actually diluting the signal and creating weird incentives such that, you know, those with something meaningful to say are drowned out because there's so much fucking noise, etc. And then it makes it harder for other remnants to actually discover the signal because there's so much other fucking crap going on. Now, one could argue that, yeah, you know, that's a filtering mechanism. There is, I honestly believe in the argument that Ethereum is great for one purpose and one purpose only. It's that it took all the fucking losers out of Bitcoin and placed them in their own Titanic. That's fantastic. So there is an argument for how this shit cleans itself up anyway, but it doesn't negate the fact that those who choose to be Bitcoiners, by the way I defined it at the beginning, right? The moral lions, let's call them, while we're on that stream of consciousness, they're the people that we want to continue appealing to. And you don't appeal to them by making your message more diluted and more miasmic. Like if you only get three, like if you stay true with your message and you appeal to three fucking lions, that is better than someone diluting their message and appealing to 3 million fucking sheep, because the 3 million sheep do not matter. Their opinion doesn't matter. They're going to be holding Bitcoin one day. They'll be holding Ethereum the next. They'll be back with their fucking pesos and their dollars the next day. They mean nothing. The only time they will have any significance is either, you know, if they were a dormant lion or a dormant remnant that woke up, or at the point at which, like we said, they need to eat 20 years from now, where they literally are fucking dying of starvation and they require some Bitcoin. And the only difference between now and then is when they want to fucking wake up, like, do you choose to be part of that initial 20% or, you know, the 80% that have, like, are you part of the 20% that wants Bitcoin? Or are you part of the 80% that has to have Bitcoin? That's literally the variable. The second question is, at what point along BTC's adoption curve is it okay to bring everyone in? And again, I would answer by saying that it doesn't matter. Like, anyone can come in. Like, the beauty of Bitcoin is that it's open. My whole argument circles around talking to the 300 Spartans and getting them in. Like, that's where your energy should go. Your energy should go into finding another fucking Spartan, not another, I think they were called Arcadians, right? So like a random fucking farmer or blacksmith to come to war with you. Because they're not going to fucking
help. I got a question. So it's not a secret that early Bitcoiners were a bunch of ANCAPs, you know, libertarians. Mm-hmm. But when we try to convince other quote-unquote ANCAPs libertarians, a lot of them thought they knew better. A lot of them thought, yes, that, you know, yeah, gold's the answer. And then you did have some ANCAPs, like say Roger Ver, who we thought he was on our side. You thought like we thought, but then he did what he did. On an individual level, man, like from what I noticed, that's why I don't try to convince anybody anymore. I plant the seed and then I walk away. Like, I noticed everybody has an answer. Like, everybody thinks they know better. I don't care who they are. Like, they think that they'll give me every excuse in the world why Bitcoin will fail. They just will give you every excuse in the world not to buy Bitcoin. The only person that was hurt by that was them. Like, I wasn't hurt by them not buying Bitcoin when I was trying to convince them to buy Bitcoin in 2012. They literally tried to convince me to sell it. Not, you know, like, I'm here trying to tell them to buy it and they're trying to convince me to sell it. It's so weird. Like, I hear what you're saying. And like, I know, like, we have to wake up the ones that are asleep, but it's fucking hard, man, because they all think they know that.
Let me even just say this. We don't actually have to do shit. Like, if you don't want to do anything, by all means, nobody actually has to do fucking anything. My whole contention is that if you're going to do something, do it in a way where you actually have signaling and not dilute it. That's it. So if you're going to fucking open your mouth, say it as it is. Don't try and be fucking nice and sugar-coated and, you know, Chuck and Udi about, like, you know, we have to be nice to these people because we want them. We need them here. No, we don't fucking need nobody. Fuck you. Like, I don't have to do shit.
What's your method? How are you waking people up? Like, are they actually receiving the message? Are they going to download a note after you talk to them? Or do they just give you the cold shoulder and then you wait for them to call you in a couple of years?
Dude, I write. I put these pieces out there. Multiple people reach out to me, say, fucking thank you. You've articulated something that I've been thinking about and I really appreciate it. And then what that does is it strengthens their resolve. And if that's the dial I move for them, fantastic. Then in an entrepreneurial capacity, you know, I built a Bitcoin only fucking business. And what have I done by building a Bitcoin only business? I've helped people move some of their wealth into Bitcoin. I didn't dilute it. I didn't create fucking just to earn a little bit more trading revenue. I didn't add ETH or some other horse shit. Like, I literally, that was my signal in an entrepreneurial capacity. Then when I get on and tweet, I have a much smaller following because I'm fucking an abrasive cunt on Twitter. And, you know, I say it as it is, but I have a really strong tribe on Twitter. And that's the signal. They're the people that I want to talk to. And my little tribe on Twitter is growing. And, you know, the right people are having, you know, taking the time to listen. So that's it. That's my thing. I'm not going out there and trying to appeal to all the fucking dweebs and the losers to get on, because I couldn't give a fuck about them. Leave them. They can fucking stick. Like, that's why I wrote last year, I wrote, do not buy Bitcoin. Like, the whole premise of that article was, I said, I'm not here to convince you to buy Bitcoin. In fact, I'm here to convince you to stay in dollars and stay in shit coins and stay in whatever the fuck you want, because I want to buy Bitcoin. I don't give a fuck about what you want. You can, by all means, stay in fiat for as long as you want. You know, if you're too dumb to realize what the fuck this is, if you're too stupid and ignorant to actually take the time to read or to study or to understand or to do whatever is required for you to appreciate Bitcoin, then have fun staying poor, basically. Like, before the meme was out, I guess that was sort of my thing. So, yeah,
you
don't have to do anything, but if you're going to do something, you talk.
You're the fucking man.
Thank you, Tom.
I mean, you could almost say that there is very few people left from the LARPertarian movement that would be convinced to buy Bitcoin, because anybody that was in that intelligentsia already been exposed and they feel all sour grapes. Alex, how do we bring, see, the brains, right? Smart people that don't necessarily have an inclination to anything. And if anything, they're too smart to even bother with thinking about inclination of things, right? So these are very...
Who, like the think boys?
Yeah, so no think boys. I'm talking about people who don't think, people who work and build.
The yuppies. Right?
So people who build devices, people who code things.
We build shit that outcompetes the legacy system with Bitcoin, and they'll come.
I can tell a recent story of my most recent orange peeling session, because like most of you guys, I'm not even trying to convince anyone. I'm just, if someone asks, I answer questions and I point to things, and if they do the work, I can help them out. But recently I helped one guy who has been saving his money. He's a lawyer and he does a bunch of different things, and he's an actual productive person. Well, when I said lawyer, maybe I threw some people off, but but he's an actual productive person, and he immediately understood Bitcoin. We were driving together for a couple hours and he understood it perfectly, and he moved immediately. He first purchased $500 and then he put everything he has liquid on Bitcoin, not as a way to get more dollars. He told me he's been looking for something like this for years and years and years and years. And from my experience recently, ever since the lockdown fiasco started, talking about Bitcoin with productive people has become increasingly easier, because they are not, from my experience, they are not just thinking number go up. They are just thinking, I'm getting out of fiat dollars. And I think that's super powerful, because this message is resonating with productive people. As Alex says, the lemmings, they are only thinking, what's the next coin that's going to pump? And that's a big, big difference.
Yes. Thank you for that one, Pablo. I guess that, NBK, does that answer what you were trying to sort of ask, like, or what you were trying to provoke? Or did what I say bring it around? Or
yes and no. So it's kind of interesting, but I find the people who are truly productive to be, except for the few exceptions, right? There is exceptions, but the great majority of the true, true productive are often fully disinterested in
the politic,
even the politics of Bitcoin, right? Like, or the socialness, or the drama, or however you want to call it. Because like rough consensus truly is a political system, you could say, right? It's the absence of one, but it is one. So
yeah.
I find that the true productive people, especially people in my organization, who are way more productive than me, that are not on Twitter, right? They are absolutely uninterested, right? So I find myself gathering these people to make shit, right? But they wouldn't be making Bitcoin shit if they had to rely on the Bitcoin message. I mean, yes, money sort of convinces, yes, the freedom convinces. They buy into every single aspect, right? But they don't necessarily live their lives or think every day about those aspects in the way that, let's call it, like most of the people who talk about these things do.
Yeah, but all that means is it's just a different method of applying your craft. Like, you know, a lot of people on Twitter, and you know, me included, I can't write fucking code, but I can bring people around to doing something, and you know, and their input is just a different flavor of input to mine. So I'm playing my part by being a fucking beacon, whereas
by building something. What I meant is, what's the best ways of attracting these people without bothering them with a message?
Yeah, well, give them a better job, a better business, and an opportunity to work on cool shit, I guess. Like that. So let's figure out like what it is that they want. So when I go out, like most of the people that work at Amber actually are what I would call not Bitcoinists. You know, they're just really good engineers. And the way I've attracted them is by building a business that anybody, irrespective of whether it's Bitcoin or whatever, wants to work at. So that's at least my attempt at a solution, is that I've attracted good people to work with me because we're building a incredible product that other people are going to want to use. So I appeal to that component, and maybe less to the Bitcoin message, but it doesn't stop me from keeping the Bitcoin message at the core of our business. So it's like that is maybe one thing, like, because you know, in the beginning, nobody on the team held Bitcoin, and here we are 3 years later, everybody on the team holds Bitcoin. So you know,
you're only in Australia, right?
We're private beta in the US right now, man. So like as of next week or two, we'll be public beta in the US.
Nice, congratulations.
That's awesome. Hey, real quick. So we got two new people. We got Mike and we got Tomer on stage. I also just want to like second that. I think that Bitcoin will start, like, it's already the cutting edge in a lot of areas. I think that the, you know, Bitcoin mining data centers are really pushing the bleeding edge of efficiency. And we're just going to start to see Bitcoin being at the bleeding edge of everything. And that's going to attract a lot of talent. And then ultimately that experience orange pills people in of itself. Like, you just can't interact with Bitcoin and not be orange pilled, I think.
Quickly, I just wanted to throw it over to Silo Soybean Scale. He hit me up and wanted to ask a question. So over to you, bro.
Yeah, I just wanted to get all your guys' like opinions, what the end of month price would be, maybe the end of October. I'm trying to figure out when this thing's really going to like pop off.
And you trolling now? That's what not to do.
Yeah, dude, Bitcoin price is going to do entirely well whatever the fuck it wants.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Okay.
Hey, guys, the only reason he got on stage was to change his avatar to fuck Logscale. I don't know if you noticed it. You can check out his profile. But this is why I disagree with Svetsky. This line of thinking, all it does is make Bitcoiners want to attack other Bitcoiners. And I'm done with it.
Nah. I don't think it makes other Bitcoiners attack other Bitcoiners.
Bitcoiners, I am so excited to tell you about the Bitcoin 2022 conference. You guys, Bitcoin 2021 was absolutely a smash hit success. It was over 13,000 Bitcoiners coming together, breaking the barriers on who can come together and celebrate freedom, celebrate Bitcoin, and the energy was absolutely electric. Unfortunately, it was just oversubscribed. There's just people flowing out everywhere. And this year, we are learning. We are making the conference bigger and better. We are moving over to the Miami Beach Convention Center, and we are going to be throwing a massive four-day festival for Bitcoin, celebrating Bitcoin, bringing together the greatest minds in Bitcoin and the greatest businesses in Bitcoin. And lastly, the culture of Bitcoin all together. We have a four-day extravaganza planned for you guys for Bitcoin 2022. Day one is going to be industry day. It is a day where you can buy a special ticket in order to just mingle and make business deals happen. Day two and three is going to be a full-blown Bitcoin conference. This is our main conference. This is going to be on April 7th and 8th. And then lastly, we have the Sound Music Festival day four. Imagine going to Coachella, but for Bitcoin. There's going to be very few talks. It's going to be all about the culture of Bitcoin. It's going to be all about hanging with your fellow plebs. And it's going to be an absolutely amazing time. There's going to be Bitcoin musicians, Bitcoin artists, and all your favorite Bitcoiners, and just an amazing environment to party and just see it all, soak it all in, and to get people to realize that a Bitcoin world, a world filled with Bitcoin people doing Bitcoin things, is the world that they want to live in. That's what Bitcoin 2022 is all about. That is what the Bitcoin conference is all about. That's what Bitcoin Magazine is all about. So it is going to be a celebration of Bitcoin, the Bitcoiners, and this amazing movement that is going to make the world a better place. Go to b.tc/conference. Learn more about the Bitcoin conference. Learn more about all the amazing things that are happening in Miami around the Bitcoin conference and buy your tickets. And guess what? If you buy your tickets with Bitcoin, you save $100 on all the tickets and $1,000 on the whale pass. So if you want the VIP pass, the big kahuna, if you buy with Bitcoin, you save $1,000. That's a lot of sats. So go and do it right now today. Don't wait. Prices are only going up. This is going to be a can't miss event. Bitcoiners, I want to tell you about The Deep Dive. The Deep Dive is Bitcoin Magazine's premium market intelligence newsletter. This is a no fluff, hard hitting, incredible newsletter going deep into the market, helping you understand what's happening with derivatives, what's happening on chain, what's happening in macro, what's happening with the narrative, and what's happening with the tech. My man, Dylan LeClaire, is an absolute savant. He is making his name known in the Bitcoin community, getting shout outs left and right, getting on podcasts left and right. And him and his team are bringing you everything that you need to know about Bitcoin. You don't even have to be on Bitcoin Twitter. You can ignore every other newsletter. This is the newsletter to rule them all. Go over to members.com. BitcoinMagazine.com. Sign up today. And if you use promo code MACRO, you get a full month for free. You have nothing to lose. What are you waiting for? Sign up. See the incredible work that Dylan and his team are putting out. And if you don't like it, just unsubscribe. You don't pay a dime. But if you do, it's going to be well worth the sats in investment in understanding Bitcoin and gaining the confidence to continue to invest in Bitcoin and making the right moves around Bitcoin. And it's going to be well worth every single Satoshi. Again, can't recommend it enough. That is members.bitcoinmagazine.com, promo code MACRO. Do it today.
This is the most important project that my life could ever possibly be dedicated to. And we're going to build an absolutely iron wall around the values that we share.
That's fucking beautiful. I actually do want to chime in on that one. Is like, to MVK's question, I guess that is the best answer, is the hyper-productive, you know, over time, they trend towards and they migrate towards where merit is rewarded. And what exists in the world today that is more of a meritocracy than Bitcoin? Nothing, zero, nothing ever will. And you know, maybe that's the lever that we have to pull with these hyper-productive people that are basically what I would call dormant remnant. You know, like they may not realize the importance of Bitcoin now, but as they realize, you know, the meritocratic element of being around and working for and working as a part of Bitcoin type companies, then there's a, I don't know, I feel like that's a very strong answer. Thank you, Harry, for that one.
Let's go to Parm. Parman.
I'll keep it short. I don't have a lot to say because a lot of good things were said today. Basically, I just think Bitcoin's going to make it anyway, and we've got some influence about who comes in early. So I like to not waste my time on people that argue or people I don't like. I tell the message to as many people as I can. I drop the word as many people as I can, and I wait for them to come to me. And whoever's interested, then I help them as much as I can. And it's a really beautiful thing when you orange pill someone really properly and fully, and you've got a friend for life after that. And it's, I encourage people to do that. That's really all I want to say.
Beautiful.
Let's go to MVK.
Hey, I'm in a noisy boat right now, but just stay toxic, my friends.
Don't lose your keys, yes, on the boat.
Or do, depending on what you want to say.
Yeah.
Too late.
They Alex, go on. You sent me a message. I can't read it right now.
No, it's all good. It's all good. That was for afterwards. Right. Does anyone else have any final thoughts, or shall me and CK wrap this
up? Well, let's give Mr. Hoddle a shot here, and then we can wrap it.
I don't got much to say. Actually, follow Svetsky, follow Bitcoin Magazine. Keep up the good work, guys.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you. All right, yeah, Alex, I'll let you close it out, man.
Thank you, guys. So I guess, you know, this piece, I hope it was provocative. It seems to have got people either riled up or really, really, you know, passionately kind of. I think that the most common message I got a barrage of messages in my DMs of people saying, thank you so much. I've had this sense and I feel like you articulated it. So I think I struck a chord with Bitcoiners. So if you haven't read it, absolutely go read it. But I think it also needs a part two. So CK will be doing a part two for this next month called The Remnant, The Masses, and The Parasites. Because I think that's what needs to be discussed here, is kind of differentiating the three archetypes. I think there's something important there to be dug into. But I just want to say thank you to Bitcoin Magazine for giving me the freedom to just like pull out my literary shotgun and just fucking take swings at people. Because some people, I remember when I was writing for some publications with Medium, you know, they would come back to me and they're like, oh, you know, we think this language is a bit too strong. So I really appreciate you guys giving me the latitude to just go ham on people. And yeah, I've got a whole lot more coming. I really want to, like, always say this, but I've got to get this Jordan Peterson fucking series going. Like, actually, this Remnant article came as a result of me writing a section in the third chapter of the Jordan Peterson piece. It's called Bitcoiners and Citadels. And that is like, I'll try have it to you by the end of the month so that people can sort of dig into that, because it talks about, like, you know, how tribalism is completely natural and how around tribes and common values, you know, Bitcoiners will build a new society around meritocracy and not proof of stake. So yeah, thank you all for jumping on. Any questions, comments, whatever, like fucking hit me up. Yeah, I'm glad to be a part of this tribe of Bitcoiners, because we're a fucking special one.
Absolutely.
Can I add to that? The fact that there are so few of us tells you a lot about the state of humanity and humans in general. Bitcoin should be pretty obvious by this point, but apparently it's not. So, and that's a depressing thought to end this on.
I think we're still early. It's not obvious yet. It's just obvious if you're woke.
That's what I mean. I mean, people should have woken up by now, but they haven't.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little depressing. I think COVID is a little depressing. But I want to end on a good note, which is go to Alex Svetsky's author page on Bitcoin Magazine. Go and read all of his articles. A lot of them are absolutely, absolutely must-read articles. And, you know, read the first few parts of his Jordan Peterson series. There are quite a bunch to kind of chew through. But, you know, read them, give him feedback, and put on the pressure so he actually finishes those writings. But Alex, I have to say, like, you know, don't stop what you're doing, whatever process, you know, if the Jordan Peterson series inspires stuff like this, you know, I'm okay with that. So outside of that, you know, I'm pretty sure Alex is going to be speaking at Bitcoin 2022. So nothing is official quite yet, but you can see him. You can see a lot of other Bitcoiners. I think you mentioned Bitcoin 2021 as a place that inspired this and other thoughts. Meeting Bitcoiners in person is huge. So highly recommend it. Everyone can get a ticket for cheap. Promo code Satoshi, and I think prices will be going up in about a week. So don't procrastinate here to lock in your plans for next April 6th and 9th. Meet folks like Alex at the conference. And yeah, I mean, Alex, anything else you want to add to that, or we can wrap it up?
No, that's it. Thank you, everyone. Really fucking appreciate it. And I will hopefully see some of you in and around conferences and bits and pieces and on Twitter and podcasts and all sorts of shit, man. So I'll see you all around. Thank you so much.
All right. Peace out, everyone. And remember, promo code Satoshi on b.tc/conference.